We're going to be hearing from Representative Laura Devlin momentarily, and we'll open up the phones as well to you to be part of that conversation at 203-333-9422. Because yesterday, Representative Tony Wong convened a group of people that are both knowledgeable and stakeholders with respect to what's going to go on with land use planning. And I saw who was there, and I knew some names and other names I wasn't that familiar with, but I wanted to hear from one of the people who was part of that panel and who represents Fairfield. Representative Laura Devlin joins us right now. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. It's a pleasure. So can you tell us a little bit about who participated yesterday? I know that Tony Wong, State Senator Tony Wong, convened this, but tell me about who was part of it and what was the focus and purpose of it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it was incredibly informative, and Senator Wong has also made available a YouTube link that if you don't have it, I'm happy to share with you, that maybe you can share with your readers, because it was an incredible amount of information that was shared. We had the WestCOG, so the Western Council of Governments, was represented. We also had COST, the Council of Small Towns, that was part of it. And then in Westport, who is involved with economic development, there was also representation there. There were some local legislators that were part of it, but really the discussion was among those three experts. And the conversation was around some pending, legislation that's a top priority for the majority in Hartford.
Yeah, and so let's talk about that, because WestCOG and now the Council of Small Towns, these are loosely affiliated organizations that many believed was a precursor to county government, although I haven't heard specific talk of county government in a while. But are these organizations thinking that they're going to be leading in trying to change zoning in the towns in their jurisdictions?
So, no, that wasn't my takeaway at all. The discussion was they are really providing leadership and collating the voices of either the municipalities that they represent. They are certainly studying the legislation, but they are not seeking, power per se. They're really doing, I think, a very good job representing the communities.
Okay, so they're filtering what communities are saying back up to Hartford, is your impression?
Yes, but I'll tell you what. I mean, it was a point made by one of them that, these proposals are the most extreme change to zoning in 100 years. And it is so important that the people in our towns, our residents, understand what is being talked about, because they're complex, but they are far-reaching and aren't all positive change.
No, I don't really like any of them. So let's talk about what they are. Go ahead, Laura Devlin. So tell us about what some of these proposals are.
So there's two particular proposals, and one of them is in the Planning and Development Committee, and it goes by HB, House Bill 5132. And that, I think, really focuses on two aspects. It's sort of shifting from a focus on 830G, which many people in our towns are familiar with, of affordable housing, that, has by and large been kind of a failed attempt at trying to increase affordable housing with some of the restrictions that are put on it, and more of a shift to 8-2, which is local zoning. And more than anything, it is almost an encouragement of higher density housing and shifting local control to dictates from Hartford that really apply a one-size-fits-all that doesn't really work. So those are some of the aspects of, 5132. There's another bill that is being fostered by Senator Anwar, It has been pulled from the system, but there are copies of it around. And it really supports an agenda of desegregate Connecticut. And again, it's an emphasis in more high density housing and trying to address issues that are really important to address, but potentially not the solutions to do so.
Well, let's get into that a little bit, because 203-333-9422, and we're chatting with Representative Laura Devlin. I'm going to just start with asking you to talk about the presumption that higher density housing is the best way to achieve affordable housing. You think that that's the right presumption?
You know, no, not at all. And in fact, some of the discussion in this forum was around the real importance for affordable housing to be near jobs, to be near transit, that, you know, a car can cost someone $11,000 a year. That's a significant expense. So, you know, building high density housing out in, you know, our smaller town somewhere may not be near jobs, or, you know, or transportation for that matter. And it's interesting because I don't know if it is still a priority of the governor or not, but, you know, his plan for economic development was to double the population in our cities, to revitalize our urban areas. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a disconnect between what is it that we're really trying to achieve here.
You're right about that.
And if we don't have, but if we don't have jobs also, that, you know, in terms of rebuilding our economy and providing opportunity, you know, that is a big deal. And our business community is certainly hurting now with the COVID crisis. But before that, we were, you know, not we were not in a good situation with, you know, companies that offered, you know, good paying jobs. You know, Connecticut was always a high cost state, but salaries were commensurate to that. So it sort of equaled out to other parts of the country. But as good paying jobs leave, we're still left with those high costs.
Yeah, no, there have been a lot of stories about how good paying jobs in aerospace have been replaced by a lot of fulfillment warehouses on old tobacco lands that are being built right now by Amazon, for example. I know. I saw a big story in the Hartford Current about that this week. So we're chatting with Representative Laura Devlin. There's also a good point that you raised about the disconnect between the revitalization of urban centers and zone suburban and exurban communities and be able to put high density affordable housing places there. But there's a lot of other, to me, you know, interests in mind when we speak about land use, because we have to speak about habitat. We have to speak about wildlife. We have to speak about, you know, more roads and more asphalt and more of all of that in places that if they don't have it now, once we put it in, they'll be forever changed. I mean, there's a lot to this. It just seems to me that the agenda is that that there is a strong feeling that people of lower income have been kept out of fancier suburban communities because they can't afford to be there, and that is to some extent a reality of economics, not necessarily of race. But there is to me, it seems like there's an agenda to control the outcome of that by attacking zoning as the problem, when to me the real issue, there is economic disparity for sure. There is an issue of people fleeing cities because they were perceived to be places of worse school districts, higher crime, and uglier spaces. I mean, there's just, and now all of a sudden zoning is the culprit that has to be changed. It seems to me a little bit ass backwards.
So, you know, you raise a really good point, and it was Francis Pickering, who was with the Western Connecticut Council of Governments, made a really good point in the forum that it seems as though, and no doubt, look, there's an economic divide, there is an education divide, there are some serious things that need to be addressed across our state. But what he said was, the premise seems to be that Connecticut is unusually segregated, and it's caused by zoning. So therefore, zoning changes will solve all these problems. And I think to your point, that's a pretty far-reaching,
I think
premise,
so.
If you will, that doesn't necessarily hold true.
And also, yeah. I think it comes at the expense of some of the beauty of the state of Connecticut, the actual beauty right. of the state of Connecticut, you know, aesthetics of the state of Connecticut. And people don't seem right. to want to talk about that, but that matters a lot to me.
Well, it does, and it is something important. And, you know, it was also raised in the discussion, the simple wording change of removing character as a reason for from zoning decisions was sort of defended as, well, not taking that away, yet it was Matt Mandel from the Westport Resident and Land Use and Zoning, an advocate with that group who was part of the forum, said, you know, those words do matter, and they matter a lot.
A lot. Matt Mandel. Yeah. Matt Mandel actually came to my attention because he successfully preserved a swath of wetlands and an undeveloped area in Westport. And I think that's when he actually became like environmentally active. And if it wasn't for the word character, I'm not sure that he and his group would have succeeded in perpetually preserving some area of Westport, which is now where the deer can be. In other words, at some point, right. you know, people run up against wildlife. What are we going to keep doing? Keep building and building and building out and not have a place for any wildlife to be? We can't just exist in our own sort of headspace as that it's all about human beings. Really?
Well, these changes are so proposed changes, so significant. It really is important that there are, and as Senator Wong, I think, emphasized, all stakeholders at the table. You know, people really need to understand this, and we need to be clear on what is it that we're trying to solve, because
exactly.
you know, we talked about
exactly.
you know, the governor in our urban areas. Okay, well, what's that trying to solve? Like, how are we addressing some of these bigger issues? And there's this piecemeal approach that may create more problems than it would actually deliver in terms of solutions. And everyone, I think, agrees.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that we're chatting with Representative Laura Devlin. I mean, why do you think Manhattan is Manhattan, right? Well, of course, it is the center of the universe for many people. But the reason that between Giuliani and Bloomberg, they had 20 years of gentrification and people coming back to the cities and parks that were reestablished that for years were just, you know, crack junkie places that nobody could be in, was because there was a lot of investment placed in the cities to make them a more livable place to be. And, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could attract young millennials who admit that they would like to be walking to their workspaces and having walkable environments, notwithstanding COVID, right? COVID's sort of shaken everything up and people are flocking to suburbs. But before that, and I think after that, people are going to want lifestyles in which they can walk to conveniences and not have to depend that much on cars. So the reality of trying to reinvest in our cities could only help everybody. Laura, I agree with you wholeheartedly. The cities in Connecticut are an abysmal failure, by and large, compared to cities in Boston and New York. They just are, from every measure. And it's sad.
Well, right. And while we wouldn't have a Boston or New York, we could have vibrant, desirable cities.
That's my point. No doubt.
And I don't think there's anybody who disagrees or doesn't believe that affordable housing, you know, providing options for affordable housing is important. Having a diversity of housing stock is important. But these are things that should also be addressed at a local level, not dictated from Hartford to what each town needs to deliver. So.
And by the way, I don't mean to say, because that was a very strong statement, that the cities are abysmal failures, because that's not really true. There's a lot of Bridgeport and New Haven. Hartford, I don't know that well. really enjoy. But when you look at them statistically, in terms of the disparity of educational outcomes, in terms of the way housing prices and their ratio of local real estate taxes to housing prices, you can see that the cities have not attracted and have not increase the level of economic prosperity and educational outcome that other of our suburban communities have. I just want to be clear about that, because there's a lot about our cities that I still love, but they have not achieved in the way that other smaller cities have in this country. They have not.
No. They have not. Yeah, I think that's an important clarification, too, because there is a huge amount of opportunity to be able to revitalize, you know, our cities. But these proposals all seem to kind of come at some issue that hasn't been 100% defined and agreed upon across the board, that, you know, may provide differing outcomes and may actually compromise what each is trying to do. But I think it's really important.
Go ahead. Well, at the panel yesterday, I was wondering, was there a fleshing out of the idea of allowing people who already have in-law apartments, accessory units on their existing structures, or who want to have them or create them, instead of having them be deed restricted forever, which is what 830G requires and has been a disincentive to the reality that there are still a lot of actually affordable housing units? For example, I know of at least three I can name in Westport where people, and a lot in Weston, where people rent out a room in a house at what all would consider to be affordable. I mean, it just is. And these are people that have very, very low incomes. And they figure out a roommate situation, and they rent a room in a house, and they do some kind of a house sharing or whatever. Sometimes it's not even a house sharing. Sometimes it's a separate entrance, right? But it's not on the books of the town. The town can't count it toward its affordable housing. Sometimes the people who live in these are minority. Sometimes they're not minority. Sometimes they're seniors. They have another demographic. Some are disabled. Whatever it is, they don't get on any lists because the person who's the homeowner does not want to have to comply and make something deed restricted for the rest of, you know, that will run with the land forever and ever. Is there a way that the state can talk about, you know, making something less onerous than that? Why does it have to be deed restricted? Why can't it just be, you know, registered a year at a time or something the way a DBA is? Do you know what I'm saying, Laura?
Yeah, and I can't give you all the details on it, but I do know that there is more of a focus on accessory apartments. And either, you know, one of the experts who were on the panel or, you know, Senator Wong, who will be the Senate ranking member on planning and development, even Kristen McCarthy-Vahey, who is the House chair for planning and development, could give a little bit more specific there. And I believe it, though, is Anwar's proposal that addresses a little bit more aggressively accessory apartments in a favorable way.
Because I think that to me is a place to have a real reasonable conversation about creating more of a diversity in our suburban communities in terms of economics, but without, you know, creating something that becomes a blight on the landscape. I think, you know, but it depends. Yeah. I guess the devil's in the detail. But this whole idea of legislating from Hartford about every community in Connecticut seems to me to be, I don't know what the cliche is, but it's taking a very big hammer to maybe a few nails. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and this legislation is something that, like I said, is very complex. Not a lot of people, you know, pay attention, and it's a different world right now in Hartford, but to discussions that are happening in Hartford. And it's so important that there is light shed on this in details, so that people know the kinds of things that are being promoted, and that all stakeholders have an opportunity to, you know, understand and to share their points of view, what may work, what may not. And maybe out of this and having the right people at the table, you know, there are sound solutions that can come forward, but it shouldn't be done in a one-sided way.
Laura Devlin, thank you very much. If you want to possibly put that link on the Lisa Wexler Show Facebook page or send it to me privately, I'd be happy to do so. I'll post it and people can listen at length and they can find out all the details.
I will, and I'd encourage you as well, if, you know, any of those experts part of the forum, Senator Wong, would be, you know, great individuals to provide more details and further updates as things move along, too. So,
good.
Thank you, Lisa.
We're going to keep an eye on this. Very important to our community. Thank you so much, Representative
Laura
Devlin of Fairfield. Thank you.